Total Celebrity Show. I'm the host of the show, Neil Haley. You can go to my website, Tolter.net, for more information. Twitter, Tolter, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, Tolter, Pinterest, Neil Haley, Google Plus, and also on Periscope at Total Tutor. And I'm excited to welcome my co-host, first of all. Happy New Year, Coach Karen Hall. Coach Hall, how
Thank
are
you. I am well, Neil. Happy New Year to you, too. Can you believe this? 2016. Wow.
I know. That's like wild me, too, and it's unbelievable. And our producer has let us know that our guest is online. So, Coach Hall, you can go ahead and introduce our guest.
Well, I'm excited about today's guest. He is by far one of the best athletes from the city of Pittsburgh, extremely talented, University of Pittsburgh. His athletic career is well noted at Pitt, and he's a City League Hall of Famer out of the infamous Fifth Avenue High School, Sam Clancy. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you, guys. Appreciate
it. Oh, great to have you. Happy New Year to
Sam,
you.
Happy New Year to you guys.
And Sam, huge fan of yours. We had an awesome first interview. I told Coach Hall I'll direct it towards where she wants to go with this, because I know that she definitely understands the history of City League basketball and stuff, as some of the guests that we've already had on the program. So, Coach Hall, I know that's where you want to start first, is go back to the roots of basketball, especially with Sam, even though, you know, we know how amazing an NFL player he was, and college basketball player, but it started before that.
I always like to take you back, Sam, let you relive some of the early glory days and take you back to your high school career at Fifth Avenue, which is a legendary school. We'll forever be here in Pittsburgh. So take us back to Fifth Avenue. Did you just come in high school playing as a freshman, or –
Well, hey, I tell you what, I don't know if I can. I try to remember as much as I can back in those days. You know, the older you get, the less you remember about things. That somebody can refresh my memory here, though. But it was great times, though. I mean, you know, all the time. If Fifth Avenue was a high school, it went from 7th to 12th grade, and we only had 550 students in the whole high school. Which was even more amazing for us to accomplish the things that we did athletically, especially basketball. I'm not so much in football, though. But my first year playing down there was in junior high, was 8th grade. Now, I'm telling you now, I chickened out in 7th grade. Yeah, I did. You know, I mean, because you know, the high school is overwhelmed. You know, you get down there, and then you don't know if you're good enough to make the junior high team. So 7th grade, I didn't go out for a team. I came up with some kind of excuse and stayed home and missed the tryouts and didn't play. Now my partner Warner Mackin played, Puffy Kennedy played, Bill Clark played, and Emma Peoples. All those guys played, but I kind of chickened out, and I don't know why, and I thought I was decent enough, but I didn't think I was good enough to play with those guys, to tell the truth.
Wow. I mean, those are some big names.
Yeah, and Karen, you know, if you know anything about Sam Clancy, you know those guys are as much as important to my success as what I went out and did. Though, from eighth grade on, though, we won every city championship. From eighth grade on, we never lost a city championship. All the way up into high school. Now we did.
Wow.
We only won. Now, fortunately, we only won one state championship, which is the year that Fifth Avenue closed in 1976. Though, but but we had some great battles. I mean, some great rivalries against Shenley, against Perry, against Allegheny.
Right.
I mean, against Peabody, Westinghouse. The rivalries and the talent that came through the city was unbelievable. And I think I told you before, Neil. I said the City League. I said Western Pennsylvania was second to none in the country, I thought, you know, growing up.
And that's a surprise, because we talked about that with Coach Hall and a couple other guests, that why is that, Sam, it's not happening anymore? Is it because the neighborhoods, the population in this area has dropped in that time period? And then when you're talking about the time period you played, the steel mills were still running. They were all closed down. And you had a more I guess, better economy altogether in that area, and more people saw it as vibrant to stay there. So I'm wondering why now we aren't seeing what WGL is such a strong.
Well, I also think that when I came up, you heard the saying, it takes a village to raise a kid.
Yes.
That was us, you know, and I can remember everybody parent we knew. All right, and everybody parent went out and support whoever was playing. They didn't care if it was their kid or it was his neighborhood kid. And it took that village to raise us to be the kind of people that we grew up to be. Right, and Karen came from the same village, you know. And but it was, you know, parents are more involved. I think parents are involved now, but kind of in the wrong way. All right, because there's so much to be offered as far as the kids getting scholarship. I mean, our parents now, I mean, I never, ever could ever talk back to a coach.
Yeah.
Where you see kids today talk back to the coach. Why? Because their parents go at the coaches. You know, now, so that was, I would have never lived another day if my father would have thought that I'm up there hollering at a coach and everything, though. Plus, there was more of... the Ozanam
right,
Culture Center, Carl Coleman. I mean, I thought that was one of the greatest programs in summer league ever.
Right.
Mr. Coleman put so many kids in college, you know, mm-hmm. through that program. It was a stepping stone for us high school. So Fifth Avenue was easy to play ball down there. It had to, when you go through the summer leagues and you get people coming from all over Western Pennsylvania just to play in these white and black. Kids coming to just play in this league here. I thought that was something special. My first year organized ball I was 13 years old, and I had Dolores who was one of the assistants up at the Ozanam. She was our coach, first woman coach. I learned how to play basketball in fourth grade from a woman, Mrs. Brown, Jenny Brown, God rest her soul.
Oh wow.
And then my first basketball organized ball was a woman, you know, and the Lord just for that 1 year. And she was a tough coach. And I remember she set me on the bench for a while, and I went home crying to my father and told him that, hey, Dad, I'm better than who she got in front of me and stuff. And he whacked me right aside the head. He said, I don't want to hear that. He said, if she's the coach, she know more than you.
Hey,
she's the adult figure. If she said that you're not good enough, all right, then you got to go and work to be better than what you are, you know. And then everything, that was the last time I set the bench in basketball, you know.
So
we don't have parents.
Ethic.
My point is we don't have parents like that does that anymore. Everybody's telling their kid how great they are,
Right.
You know, you got to tell them how hard you got to work to be great.
Yeah.
So, you know, the work ethic that we hear in your conversation about, you know, your experiences, you know, and you're seeing how parents are different today. So when you go back to even the Ozanam and, you know, the experience you just mentioned, what lesson did you get out of that? Like, what lesson did you get and did you hold on to as you continued to go to high school and then as you started to look for college? What early lessons did you get from that?
Well, you learned that nothing is going to be given to you. If you want something, you have to go out and put the time and effort into it. You have to really work at being good. You have to work at being great. And I thought I was good. I never thought I was great, even till this day. I might hold a few records, but I thought I was good. I enjoyed the game.
Oh, yeah, you're pretty great.
I appreciate it, Karen, you know. But you know, I mean, greatness is who I look at those NBA guys, you know, Jordan and LeBron and Kobe. Those guys put time in that I never can imagine to put in, even though I thought I put some time in here at Pitt, you know, in the Fifth Avenue. But I learned that you have to really work at what you really want. You know, you can't wait to somebody just give it to you. Now, and I think part of our problem today is that, you know, and no offense against AAU, a little bit AAU messed things up because on an AAU team, what do you have? You have all superstars. So you don't have that guy that's going to dive on the floor for a loose ball. You don't have that guy who just want to bang out just for the rebounds. You know, like I said, nothing against AAU. I mean, a lot of great talent come out of there, though. But you put a bunch of superstars, so when they get to the next level, everybody can't start in college.
Right.
You know, but everybody think they're a starter. Instead of working to, instead of complaining to the coaches why they're playing or transferring to another school, instead of just working, say, okay, forget that. Hey, I was down to sit on the bench the last time. I'm going to go out and work my butt off to take whoever spot I got to take just so I can get some playing time. You know, the guys don't think like that today.
Yeah.
And
not at all.
The time they put in the work, I think that you used to have, as I talked to a lot of players in your time and earlier, and even the time when I played, is we go to the playgrounds. We didn't play in the 80s. You did have the OZAM. You did have those opportunities for the all-star teams. But ultimately, when it's 6 o'clock and it's nice out and it's 50 degrees or warmer, you're out there playing. You're out there playing with guys on the playground, no organized, no referees, just play.
And having fun. And it's more competitive on the playground than it is when you start playing the organized ball and everything. You know, and that's what we're missing, too. And unfortunately, especially in the city neighborhoods, though, kids go on the playground now, and next you know there's some kind of drive-by. You know, that's unfortunate for our kids there, though. And I really couldn't tell what we can do. I mean, I think only our officials can crack down on that, though. And the parents, you got to know what your kid is doing. You got to know what your kid is doing and what he's involved in to try to put a hand on and stuff. And then I also think that we need fathers to step up, too.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of these young men, I'm talking about young black men, are raised by single mothers and stuff, and they don't have that man figure in their life. And then the woman do the best she can, though, but still they need that man in there to tell them what's right or wrong if he's that father figure, you know. And it don't have to be your biological father. You just have someone in your life, a mentor, who can take you in that direction and stuff and tell you what you need to know on how to become a man.
So, you know, you mentioned the mentor thing, and, I mean, gosh, did you grow up with some great players who I had the fortunate chance to meet. So who was that mentor to you as you – you know, the end of your high school days are coming, and now you have to think about what's next. Who was directing you, and how did you get to Pitt?
Well, I was fortunate to come from a good home where I had both parents there. You know, now, but when I wasn't around my parents, I could always look back at any one of the coaches I had, if it was Elmer Gucker down Fifth Avenue, or Jim Lightfoot at Fifth Avenue, or George Duke Brown. And John Gipko is probably the two other biggest outside of school who was the biggest mentor to me outside of Fifth Avenue, because with John Gipko, I got a chance to travel the country and play in various tournaments, you know, against Magic Johnson, Gene Banks back in those days. I mean, so I got a chance to experience basketball outside of Western Pennsylvania. Now with Duke Brown, all right, now he had us ever since the 8th grade all the way up until the 12th grade, and he would never put us in a tournament of our age. If it's a 12 and under, we playing, and we're 12 years old, we playing in the 14 or 15 and under. So we always played against the older older age level of competition, which really got us together. We didn't know by the time we got to 10th grade, our senior basketball, guys who we used to play the White Clay, and I remember Bill Clark and I played in the YMCA Summer League. It was the adult only league, and we were the only two high schoolers in it. I was in 10th grade. Clark was in 11th grade. And I got a chance to play against my all-time Pittsburgh hero, Maurice Lucas. And he beat me down. But I've never been so proud to get beat down by a guy.
Yes.
You know, and it's always, but that's what, you know, but that's where we come from. And he was laughing and joking with me. He's playing for the Portland Trail Blazers. I'm in high school playing against Maurice Lucas. And I'm like, Luke, I got you, man. I got you. I'm gonna bust you up. And he would back me down. He backed me down, shoot an elbow, and said, "Take this little buck." Boom. You know, and stuff. And But I loved it, you know, and I knew I couldn't compete with Luke, but I was on the same court trying my best to do my best with him, and that's where we come from. Like those mentor, watching Dwight Clay and Ricky Coleman battle, you know, man, those were the greatest battles I ever seen, you know.
So you had a lot of exposure. You had tons of exposure.
And I wanted to be those guys. I wanted to be those guys. I really did. I just wanted to be just like them. I didn't know where it would lead me, and I always thought I just was an okay player. I never thought that I was a great player. I thought that I knew that I work hard and I give it my all, though, but I had some great players around me, you know. I had some Warren Macklin, Puppy Kennedy, you know, who we all came up, you know, from seventh grade on. Like I said, I didn't play with him in seventh grade, but we played in the summer league together, and when Duke Brown got a hold of us, I mean, we became a family. We really became a family.
Mm-hmm. All right, so.
And I don't know if you guys, Karen, you might. I know you. I don't know if you guys remember all those names I'm throwing at you, though.
No, I don't. And actually, Karen Hall was very cognizant of that fact, playing in the City League as well, and learning from a lot of talking to legends when she was playing Ozanam to find out who these players were 10 years beforehand as well, Sam. Now, looking at this, Sam, let's talk about why did you have a football body in high school? How did you develop that football body?
Yeah.
And that's something I think we talked about before in the program, but I think why the mindset that, you know, football players that played football, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to, and that's the reason I played basketball. Basketball wasn't your priority. Basketball was your priority. Why did you think you need to have such a wide body?
Well, I don't know how the body developed, because back in those days, though, there was no weightlifting. I mean, if you can remember, you guys played. If you can remember, if you lift basketball, they thought it would take away from your shot. Now, me, I didn't
have
it anyway, so it didn't make no difference. But there was no weightlifting. There was no high school. I mean, I think in Fifth Avenue, we had that one universal machine, and they even went to Brashear my senior year.
Yeah.
We had the same one universal machine, just a newer one. You know, so there was no dumbbells. There was no bars or anything to lift any weight, though. But I don't know. I just think playing against we were always playing. That was one thing that we always were doing.
Okay.
And I know that in Fifth Avenue, the reason, and I thought I had a pretty decent vertical, we just jump over benches all day. You know, now they call polymetrics or plyometrics and all that stuff.
Right.
But Elmer Gucker had us jumping on and over those benches even back in those days, you know, I think jump as high as you can to touch the high as you can on the backboard. So that helped develop all the muscles in your legs. I mean, constantly doing that stuff. Now my upper body, I don't know how that came to be. I just, I don't know. I'm gonna take that to my mom's food, though. Usually the food she's making now ain't putting no muscles on you, though. But when you're running a lot and you're playing a lot and you're eating some good food, though, I figured that's how I developed that way, though. My father was a big man too. He was 6'4", about 300 pounds, you know. So, and my mom was 5'11". So some of that came, you know, all of that was genetic.
Well, it served you well. It served you very well, both on the court. And, you know, I'd like to, you know, give us a story behind Jackie Sherrill. He saw you playing up there, you know, your pit career. And then I guess he talked about, hey, if you gave him 2 years, he'd make you a football American. I mean, you continue your basketball career. But how did that play? That was like a prelude to pretty much your future in that football. So
It was a future, Karen, that I did not know that I could even compete in at all, you know. And Jackie Sherrill seen something to me, and I love him. He was here twice this football season for the Pitt games, and I got a chance to talk to him. And till this day, he always keep telling me, teasing me. He said, Sam, you know you still owe me. I said, Coach, the check is in the mail. Check is in the mail. But how it started, though, and I did get recruited for some football teams, as long with in Ohio State, Pitt, you know, some other schools wanted me to come out and play basketball and football. And if you can remember, football, Fifth Avenue, and then Brashear is the only winning season we ever had. that one year.
Right.
Yeah, we were 6-2. But every year, Fifth Avenue, we were 2-6. We win two games,
yeah.
And we had beat South, and we had beat Gladstone or somebody like that. But we would get our butts kicked.
Yeah.
Every game. So I played football because Warnie Macklin went out and Puffy Kennedy. They were in ninth grade, and I'm like, man, these are my guards. Man, I got to go out and play football. You know, show that I'm a little tougher than they are, just to protect them. You know, and it worked out great though. But Jackie Sherrill really chased me around for 4 years. And I was one of them coach him of basketball. Plus Tim Gergerich was my man.
Yes.
Tim Gergerich was my man. He was the reason that, I became best friends with him. He sat at my dinner table many times. He's my mom. I could never not remember a summer league game from 10th grade on that he wasn't at. You know, when we were playing up there at Ozenam, when we were playing out there in East Hills, when we were playing anywhere, I could never not remember him not being there and letting his presence being known. So we became good friends and everything. And but Jackie shook me around, and then Gerg was saying, "Ah, that football ain't for you. You better take this basketball." Now Jackie went the other way. Now, but Jackie was smart. He went the other way. He said, "Hey, you know," and here's what Jackie said, "Hey, I'm gonna tell you now. There's no 6'6" centers in the NBA or power forwards in the NBA." He said, I mean, "That's what he said. Now you come out for me, play for me, I will make you an All American."
Wow.
And how it came about, where I did go out for the team my senior year, is that Gergerich resigned. All right, and I was pissed. Sorry, I shouldn't say that. I was
you're
a little
good,
mad that Gergerich resigned. And Sam Shula, one of our donors, and Foz Fagio was the defensive coordinator, came out and said, "Sam, Jackie wants you to come out." So I went out for the spring. Anyway, it only lasted 2 weeks, you know, but I did a pretty good job, I think, in 2 weeks because Coach and I love Jackie, like I said, because he has a way to see, okay, if this game is for you or if it isn't for you, because at the end of every practice I was there, he is sending the first defense off, and he said put the second defense up, but the first against the first offense, which is Dan Marino. You got I'm going against Russ Grimm and Mark May, college Hall of Famers and NFL Hall of Famers, and he just run five plays, and all five would be over towards my side to see if I'm tough enough to take what they ditching out. And I don't know how I did it. A couple of times I slid it through, made a couple of tackles. And every day I get involved in at least two tackles out of five plays. And Coach Sherrill would pull me in his office and say, "Sam, look, here's the film. Here's you going against my studs, and you are battling and you're making plays." And then I sprained my ankle the one practice. And then we got the new basketball coach, Roy Chipman.
Yeah.
Roy said, "Sam, I can't have my best player playing football. You got to either decide football or basketball, and I can start all over." So obviously I went back to basketball.
Yeah.
You know, and then I never thought of anything else of football after that, though. You know, when the Phoenix Suns drafted me in third round, I went up there. You know, when they released me, I never thought that they sent me to Billings, Montana. Continental Basketball Association, and I got up there. It's about 24 inches of snow, and I get a call from the Seattle Seahawks that same day, and said that Jackie Sherrill said that you're a pretty good player. Do you want to compete for a position? And that's how it all started. I said, "Yeah, I wouldn't mind."
Wow.
About technique. Yeah, I wanted to jump into this because we're at the part three of Sam Clancy's interview on the Total Education Network celebrity show, because especially we're getting into this, but things that you didn't answer last time, which, again, you're a storyteller. I tell you, Sam, you say you don't remember things. You remember a heck of a lot. And
sure,
book with all the stories. I keep telling everyone that Karen has always said, they got to write a book. I mean, it's just so many fascinating things. But when you got that, the thing when you went to the NFL is you never really played college football. You did. You got to play.
And we weren't that good in high school.
So where did you learn your technique? Because that's got to be in the show that you had such unbelievable talent and gifts to play in the NFL with hardly any technique, meaning the technique that you know to make you a successful NFL player. So tell us you kind of caught up when you play and go to these tryouts and you're playing with guys – that have played major college football,
yes.
have played against the best players, have had the greatest coaches of all time, because we know how competitive that is for an NFL spot.
Right, right. Well, and like I said, I had very little technique when I got there. Obviously, when you're a basketball player going to play football, you have a tendency to raise up. So your chest is available to that offensive lineman or that tight end. You get a helmet in your chest every time. So you had to learn that fast, though. But my defensive, the first year of Seattle, I was a tight end. Now, all the other years, I played defensive end.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so, but anyway, I go to the defensive side because that's what I played, though, because I had no techniques in there either, though. George Dyer was the defensive line coach up at the Seattle Seahawks, and all he talked about is pad level, keeping your pads down, using your hands, taking your first step, seeing your target. And all that was new to me because, like I said, high school, from high school to pros, high school, you just get and go. You're one of the biggest guys on the field. So, you just hit a gap and nobody can stop you. But when you get into professional, where you're playing against men,
right.
You had to learn how to compete on their level, though. So, but what I done after I got the techniques that George Dyer was trying to teach, it goes back to working at it. So I would stay out on the sled. I would hit the sled. I would go to my room, all right, because the NFL playbook is crazy of what you got to learn and stuff. So I would go back and I would visualize. I lay in my bed and I would visualize myself. I visualize George Dyer telling me to take the step, use your hands, come off low, all right, then press the guy off your body. All right, so I would visualize that because of it. Don't forget now, I have no college, a week and a half of Jackie Sherrill, still, then went right back to basketball. So I would visualize that, and then I would get in the playbook every night and just look and make sure that, first of all, I had to be mentally tough and not make the mental mistakes because mental mistakes would get you cut on any professional team. They hate guys not doing studying, so I did that. And I just visualized myself seeing plays. And every day I got more and more confident in it, and I see that the techniques were coming, and the techniques were coming. Now, the best thing that happened for us back in those days, we had six-week training camps, okay? And the first week were rookies only or young people who need work. So the vets come in, and back in those days, there was no off-season program. The vets would come in to get in shape. These are guys still smoking cigarettes in the locker room. So I was going against other young guys, even though they had college experience, though athletically, I matched up well against them.
Wow.
If that make any sense, just talent wise, I matched up well against the young guys because they knew as much as I knew. They knew a little more because they have had techniques in college, but it's different in the NFL. And I was able to build my confidence up going against the young guys who were really the same age I were. All right, until that next week, I got a reality check. Where I was having a great camp. Great rookie camp that 1 week, I get a reality check, and I would never touch in pass rush. I was running around these guys, and I get to, and I'm trying to do the same thing against the vet. They snatch me up and throw you on the ground. Like, where you going? It was different. So you had to learn as it went on.
So your work ethic was in place.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, I didn't hear.
I'll say, Coach said your work ethic was definitely in place. But I have to cut us off, and I can't believe this. Have to set up part three. I'd love to come down to the TV studio to meet you, Sam, face-to-face, especially as you were my legendary role model in so many ways when I went and watched you at the University of Pittsburgh at Fitzgerald Fieldhouse and the stories and the thought process of basketball and how I never thought that I'd end up being as big as you or even bigger than you, Sam. When I was a kid watching you at Fitzgerald Fieldhouse. So we definitely have to set up part three. But, Sam, best place to find information on you is at the University of Pittsburgh's website, right? At the sports website,
yes.
Correct?
Yes, yes.
All right. Well, fantastic. Thanks for calling, Sam. And, Coach, what a great guest. We have another guest coming up very soon.
Thank you guys for having
me. Thanks, Sam. Thank you.
Take care,
guys. All right,
okay,
thanks.
You too.
Okay, bye-bye.
Happy New Year.
All right, that was a cool celebrity show.
You
Happy
too.
New
Year
to you as well. We'll be live soon. Take care.